Hello, everyone, and in today's episode, I'll be talking about a rather volatile topic, body shame, how U.S. culture perpetuates body shame, a few examples of these experiences at LA Fitness, and a little bit of background into how I grew up, the things that I was taught growing up in the U.S. from my family and from U.S. culture in general. And I think I'm going to start with the family aspect. So full disclaimer, if you are sensitive to body shame, if you have body shame trauma or anything related to this, this episode might be triggering. So proceed with caution. I definitely recommend having a therapist when you deal with these types of issues because it helps a lot. And so with that disclaimer out of the way, I'm going to proceed to share some of my experiences. So to get started, I will start with when I was 7 years old. I was seven. I was at Target or Ross, some clothing shop, with my mom. And we were trying on clothes. We had grabbed a bunch of t-shirts. And she passed me some t-shirts and I tried them on. And one of the t-shirts didn't fit. And, you know, logically, if a t-shirt doesn't fit, maybe you should try a new one or something like that. You know, there's a lot of different possibilities you could do with t-shirts. But instead, she said, "The t-shirt doesn't fit. I hope you don't have diabetes." I was 7 years old. 7 years old when I was taught to count calories. 7 years old when I was taught to count carbohydrates, to read nutrition labels on the back of a cereal box. Under the guise of healthy eating and a healthy lifestyle and discipline, because it's important to be disciplined, which really became a proxy word for body shame. Even today, so many people in my family make fun of people who are fat. My grandma is obese, very obese, and my mom has a deep-seated fear that she'll become exactly like her. She's terrified, absolutely terrified of gaining weight. She projected that fear onto me at age 7, which is why she said, "I hope you don't have diabetes," because my grandma has diabetes, pretty severe, and she's been obese for my entire life. Naturally, I inherited a lot of insulin-related genetics and other genetics from my mom's side, and so from the age of 7, I learned what insulin means when I was 7. Tell me, in what world is it okay? Unless, like, if a 7-year-old has diabetes and it's actually affecting their life, okay, then that makes sense. That's logical. But why would you project fear onto a child? Like, this is unacceptable. This is just not okay. So basically, I had so much pressure my whole life to eat perfect. So you might be wondering, what does eating perfect mean? Well, naturally, I dealt with so much emotional pain and struggle, like in middle school, for example, that I did turn to emotional eating. Because what else was I going to do? Well, eventually, I was able to kind of grow out of that in high school, and the emotional eating aspect mostly went away. But what stayed? All of these really fucked up algorithms around what foods are okay and which foods are not. Let me give you another example. So my dad is a bodybuilder, or he was for a long time. He is really into gaining muscle, and he basically taught me that certain foods are evil. However, which foods were evil really fluctuated depending on the current research. In the early 2000s, eggs were evil. In the mid-2000s, eggs were no longer evil. Is meat good or is meat not good? I watched my dad go through about 15 different, very intense diets, and including an 8-month period of extended fasting where he would literally have to carry pixie sticks around with him or he would faint. My dad goes to the gym 5 days a week, which sounds like healthy, right? Except he works out until he feels like he's going to puke. He pushes himself so hard, so consistently, that it wrecks him. And I, as a child, had to witness that. I watched as he almost fainted from not eating. I watched as his blood sugar levels fluctuated rapidly up and down. And I saw the same pattern in both of my parents. My mom's deeply rooted fears of being fat, and my dad's deeply rooted insecurities of not being muscular enough. I remember he showed me a magazine where he said, "I wish I was as strong and as muscular as that guy." Now, the guy on the magazine was very clearly, visually way less muscular than my dad. And it made me realize in that moment, my dad's responses of pushing himself harder and harder and harder to the point of injury, they're trauma responses. Same for my mom. My mom, she drinks alcohol. She's an alcoholic, and my dad also drinks. Pretty much everyone in my family drinks. I am actually one of the only people in my family who never drinks and never will, because I have seen the problems that alcoholism can cause. And so, basically, I saw the same pattern in both of them, both of my parents. They would project that same pattern onto me. And that pattern was that I need approval from others to be good enough. That pattern was that my body as it is not good enough. That pattern was that if I'm not skinny, I'm not worthy if you're a woman, or if I'm not strong, I'm not worthy if you're a man. And since I'm autistic, I actually got programming from both sides, because for me, I guess for most people, there's some kind of a gender filter that this kind of programming goes through. Usually for women, you have to be skinny to be seen as beautiful, and for men, you have to be seen as muscular and strong to be seen as beautiful. I inherited both of these things, and I inherited them in part from these projections from my parents, and in part from me not rejecting things on the basis of some kind of a gender norm. And so I'm that person who shows up four days a week, sometimes more. I push myself so hard. I have been working out since I was 8 years old. And now, is it a good thing to be healthy? Yeah. But if you are showing up to the gym from trauma circuits, desperately trying to prove your worth over and over and over again when you already have it, you can see how that would become problematic. I'm going to share another example. So, for a long time, when my dad was fasting, it was triggering for him to be around food, specifically smelling food. I remember when I was 14, I was making breakfast. It was a healthy breakfast. It was one egg, a piece of toast, and cream cheese. Like the healthy kind of bread, you know, Dave's bread or whatever it is. My dad walks by, takes a big whiff out of the air. "That smells so good. I wish I could have some." "Dad, the skillet is right there. You can have some. Just eat." And he wouldn't. He told me that he would rather be disciplined than eat. He told me that he would rather prove that he is good enough by forcing his body into submission, basically. He used to say, "I treat my body like it's a temple." But I don't actually think that's true. Because I don't know about you, but I don't worship under a dom-sub relationship. And so it's really frustrating to be in these patterns. I was 14 years old. I hadn't eaten since the night before. I was hungry and I was in puberty. And yet I was judged. I was harshly judged for the simple act of fucking eating. It's messed up. It's messed up. And our culture in the U.S. perpetuates this mindset everywhere you look. Look at literally anywhere. You'll see photos and magazines of women who are super skinny. They will literally take AI and Photoshop and all the other programs to make them look even skinnier. Because collectively, the U.S. has decided that one of our beauty ideals is thinness. But that ideal does not capture the true cost. And what is the true cost of thinness? Or What is the true cost of strength against all odds and physical strength? Well, it can hide wounds. Not only does it hide wounds, but it takes away the pain. It becomes an escape from pain, because if you're constantly working out, if you're constantly busy, and if you're constantly doing more and more and more and more and more and more things, then you never have to look in the mirror. You never have to, and I'm talking emotionally, not physically. I'm not talking about the people who are looking in the mirror physically every day. No, that's probably the same issue. It leads people to hide the traumas that they've been through and to become oblivious to the projections that they are placing onto other people. Somehow I was able to start recognizing this when I was like 12 or 13 years old, which was way too early. Like, if you're a parent and you have kids, please, I don't want you to teach your kids how to count calories until at the very least, unless they request it, or maybe if there's an actual legitimate health issue or something like that. But if you're going to shame a kid into fucking eating breakfast, you might want to go to therapy. And I don't say that as a threat. I mean that genuinely. So on both sides of my parents, both of them were trying to protect me. They were trying to protect me in different ways. In IFS, we call this a protector part. And protector parts are not evil. Protector parts really just want to protect the whole system and protect other people as well from different things. So in my mom's case, she was trying to protect me from diabetes, which is why she so strongly emphasized exercise and healthy eating and all of that. But what good is that without emotional attunement? What good is that if the kid feels guilt and shame when eating? What guilt is that when a little girl walks into a bathroom, opens the door, looks in the mirror, and the first thing her eyes go to is how her belly is too round or too wide? It's fucked up. From birth, I saw my mom look at herself in the mirror and tell me everything she hated about herself. She thought she was telling it to herself. She was telling it to me. She thought she was telling it to herself. She was telling it to my sister. And so is it any wonder that my sister eventually developed anorexia and eventually also became a model? Fortunately, my sister realized forcing my body to be some beauty ideal is not the way I want to live my life. Ignoring my body's hunger signals and need for food, not as a reward and not as a punishment, but as fuel for existence, this is the way. This is one of the things my sister taught me. My sister went through the whole cycle of anorexia, becoming a model, and then realizing all the fucked up mental dynamics behind it. Because this U.S. society teaches women that we're not worthy if we're not skinny. It teaches women that we're not worthy or even allowed to exist if we're not a crystal clear, perfect image of the, quote, ideal woman, quote. What is the ideal woman, anyways? What does that mean? Do you think that a woman who's skinny is morally superior to someone who's fat? Genuinely, I'm asking, because there are people that genuinely believe this. I've met them. I've met so many of them. And it's sickening. It's sickening because I can see how the entire trauma cycle in U.S. culture perpetuates the same beliefs over and over and over again to shame men into showing their emotions and vulnerability, and to shame women into being leaders, into being scientists, and shame women into basically trying to force their bodies to look the way that a cis male would determine is attractive. That's really sad. If the only way for women to succeed in life is to make themselves look attractive to feel worthy, that's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking for so many reasons because it completely ignores the underlying worth of human beings. If you're listening to this and you're obese, I'm going to tell you right now, you're fucking worthy. You're worthy. You're allowed to be here. You're allowed to exist. And you know what? I'm really sorry that if anyone ever told you that you're not allowed to do any of those things, if anyone ever tried to shame you for how you look, if anyone ever told you that you weren't good enough because you didn't have muscles or because you weren't skinny, that wasn't okay. And that was a result of their symptomatic projections of the collective unconsciousness that is so prevalent in U.S. culture. So here I am calling it out. So I had an experience a few days ago at LA Fitness. And I knew going into it, I kind of expected that it wasn't going to be a great experience. I walk into LA Fitness and I see advertisements all over the place for these personal trainers. So they're like, it's a free assessment. You might as well try it. So I'm like, okay, well, why not? It's free. Sure. Why not? But I was skeptical. And my husband tried it as well. So basically, they have a machine, a handheld machine that has different modes. One of these modes is marked as athlete, and one of these modes is marked as sedentary. If sedentary is selected, the machine will automatically assume that you have more fat and less muscle, and it will change its numbers by up to 10%. 10%. So this machine, mid-endo flare-up, I have endometriosis. I was having a flare-up 2 days ago. It was pretty brutal. Not a fun time. I walk in for my assessment. The machine tells me I'm at 35% body fat. 35% is obesity, okay? And I know you all can't see me right now, but I'm not obese. I'm showing up to the gym 4 days a week. I am eating somewhat healthy, and I have clearly defined muscles in many different areas in my body. This is not me defending or not defending any particular number. The truth is, I don't know what number I am, and it doesn't actually matter. Because whether I'm 35% or 25% or 15% body fat, the way that I am in this current moment is allowed to exist. My body fat does not create my worth. And I knew this. I knew this going into it, but it still triggered all the trauma circuits, you know, all the intense times that I was judged for how I looked. And, you know, before I knew I was autistic, I genuinely thought people hated me because of how I looked. I thought that there was just something that they didn't like about my appearance. What else would I have thought? If you don't know that you're autistic and you don't know anything about autism and you don't have any representation, you're going to find some other way to explain why people are treating you so differently and why people are being ableist to you and why people are not able to attune to or even understand your needs. You're going to find some way to explain it. You will. And in my case, the way to explain that was maybe people don't like how I look. Because that was actually what I was taught in my family. I remember one time my mom got really drunk, and I wish it was only one time. The amount that I could keep recording about that topic is way too long. But anyways, she had gotten really drunk the night before. She had screamed at me, cornered me, and basically scared the shit out of me at like age 10 or 11. I don't even know what age it was. It happened so many times. So the next day she forgot it because she had been so drunk. She lost all memory of it, I guess. And she wanted to apologize. So how does she apologize? A combination of silence and breakfast. She would buy my sister and I breakfast the day after abusing. And that's what it was. I'm not going to dash around that word anymore. When you shame a child and make them feel like they have to look a certain way to gain your approval, that's abuse. That's textbook emotional abuse. It's conditional love and it's not okay. When you scream at a child for hours on end because you're unable to regulate your own emotions, and that's abuse too. When you expect a child at age 12 to save you from suicide, that's also enmeshment abuse. And so, you know, I can't tell this story without also talking about abuse. It's simply not possible. Because the thing is that our culture has found ways to basically save face in so many possibilities, in so many ways, that people are not taught to take accountability for their actions. And at its core, here's the thing. You can, with the best of intentions, still be abusive. And I think that nuance is what is so difficult for people to accept and confront. Because people are like, oh, how could I be abusive if my intentions were to do this? My intentions were to just protect my child, or my intentions were to do this or that. It doesn't matter. It doesn't. I mean, Yes, intentions do matter, but that does not give other people the right to just take advantage of you. And body shame fits right into that category. Body shame, at its core, is also abuse. Body shame is the moral contract that I cannot be loved if I don't look in an appropriate way. So I have another story. So when I was in middle school, I used to walk to the bus with this girl. I don't even remember her name, unfortunately. And she would dress with short shorts and a t-shirt that was slightly revealing. My mom decided that an appropriate name for this child, this minor, by the way, she was in 8th grade, I was in 7th, she decided to call her prostitution girl. For an 8th grade child. Like, I don't know about you, but I don't think any reasonable or compassionate adult would ever think that is okay. And, like, if you're listening to this and you think it's okay to call a minor prostitution girl, then please go to therapy. And even if not, go to therapy, because therapy is for everyone. But I digress. Obviously, that was not okay. So I decided to study trauma, because I'm interested in trauma. I wanted to know how can people actually free themselves from so many shitty situations. And I found out that neurologically, memories are not actually stored in the brain. They are recreated. Every time you remember something, you're technically changing it. So what does this mean? It means you can remember a traumatic event and then remember something else and change the memory. In this case, something else, love, connection, and happiness. That's kind of how IFS works, because you remember the traumatic event and think about it in terms of all your parts that are involved, and then you're also offering these parts love, connection, and understanding. And so then that rewires the entire brain neurologically for that memory to eventually become associated with not only the pain of the trauma, but also the joy of love and connection, which then neutralizes the emotional charge and frees you from it. This, by the way, is what Caroline Elliott talks about in her book, Existential Kink. Shameless plug, I do not know her at all, but she is one of the most amazing authors I've ever met. I mean, I've ever read. Her book is just fantastic. You should totally check it out. It has changed my life in many ways, and I have been impressed with how neurologically accurate it is, even though it does not go into the science of neuroscience. Anyways, so the point of all that is that when people go through traumatic events, in order to heal that trauma, they have to trigger the trauma circuits again with agency. In other words, this prostitution girl, whoever she is, she probably had been abused at some point. She probably had been sexually abused. I don't know her story. Maybe she just didn't have money for certain types of clothing, and the only thing available was short shorts, like every store in the U.S. sells for literal children. I don't know. I don't know her story. But what I do know is it was never appropriate for my mom to call her that. And it was never appropriate for her to be labeled against her consent in any regard. And it was never appropriate for my friendship with this girl to hang on a string, to hang on a thread. It was not appropriate for my parents to disapprove of her for how she looked. And it really taught me so much from such a young age about my parents' biases. That you were only lovely or worthy of being loved if you looked a certain way and acted a certain way and conformed to a certain standard. And that really fucks up a child's psyche. It really does. I'm grateful and blessed that I've been able to heal from a lot of this through EMDR and therapy and IFS. I've been in therapy for about 2 years and it helps a lot. But everywhere I look, even outside of therapy, I find this awareness is lacking. People have so normalized body shame culture that they fail to recognize it as abuse. And that is what body shame is. When you tell or act like a fat person or an obese person is not as good, is not as capable, is not as worthy, or not as good is someone who is skinny, you're part of the problem. If you act like a skinny, tall, lanky man who doesn't have any muscle, is not good enough, is not able to protect or provide for his family, then you're part of the problem. And here's the thing. Sometimes you can be part of the problem without even realizing it, without even intending to be part of the problem. And that's what also makes this so tricky. You can, with the best of intentions, still perpetuate problems. You can now see where the roots of my harm OCD came from, probably. That's also not the answer, but that's a different episode. So how do we break out of this conditioning? How do we break out of this idea that men have to be strong and women have to be skinny to be worthy? Well, awareness. Awareness is the first step, recognizing abuse for abuse. Because if you can't recognize abuse, because if you've been programmed to suppress your awareness of abuse because it feels uncomfortable, then there's no way you can do anything else but perpetuate the same problems that are causing it to begin with. I'll give you another example. I once worked with a coworker who told me that he was spanked as a kid, and spankings were an important part of discipline, that he turned out okay. Well, I don't know about you, but I think anyone who condones physical violence of a literal child from being unable to control their own emotional state is definitely not okay, and probably needs years of therapy in order to undo their conditioning that it was okay for them to be abused at that age. So, people at LA Fitness and organizations will use these insecurities against you. They will use everything they know about human behavior to try to manipulate you. And this is what happened 2 days ago. This trainer gave my husband a full workout and gave me foam rolling. And he created inflated artificial numbers, bad data from false inputs, in order to try to sell me on a personal training course. So they get you locked into these courses. It's a whole 9-month program, you see. And you're not allowed to cancel. And if you cancel, you're allowed to cancel, but if you cancel, you only get half of your money back. And they use shame to perpetuate women to join their program. They will either use positive reinforcement, usually for men, or negative shame and judgment, usually for women, because they've been culturally conditioned to believe that that is what works to motivate us. I almost can't even blame him. He's just a symptom. He's just a symptom. Whether you go up to a crocodile, not an alligator, those are different animals, a crocodile, known to be aggressive, would you go up to a crocodile and be angry that it bit you? No, that would be illogical because it's typically aggressive animal that will chase things that it sees and go after them and try to bite. Alligators, by the way, don't do that, but that's a different story. Anyways, I can't even blame this guy because he's over here as a sales guy trying to sell more of his course, getting kickbacks from selling his personal training classes, which, by the way, are 2 sessions a week for 30 minutes. For a total of $4,300 for a whole 9-month contract. So they get people locked in, either from shame or from other reinforcement mechanisms. I was able to recognize at least 3 different manipulation behaviors. Number 1, familiarity bias. If you make the other person feel like you're familiar, then they are more likely to like you, and then they are more likely to trust you, and then you can use that trust to sell to them. That's number 1, familiarity bias. He basically had detected that I'm autistic because at the end of the day, if I'm going to a personal training class, fuck masking. I'm not going to mask. I'm not going to go to the gym just so I can mask. I go to the gym so I can unmask, so I can get my workout in, and so I can feel good, so I can love myself, and so I can be alone with my music, usually, and many other reasons. Familiarity bias was the first one. Second one, artificial inflated numbers with false data, in order to shame people with a faulty device. These devices that measure body fat percentages can have error rates of up to 10%. I don't know about you, but there's a big difference between 20% body fat and 30% body fat and 10% body fat. And that difference is kind of important when we're talking about personal training. Number two, I told him that I'm a data person and that I'm interested in data. He used that as a means to basically weaponize what he knows that will convince me against me. He tried to use data to convince me to join this program. However, the data was based on false inputs. Garbage in, garbage out. I'm not a programmer for no reason, dude. I know. I know how you can manipulate data. And as a result, I also know how you can manipulate data to manipulate people. And that is what LA Fitness is doing in this respect. If you don't believe me, go on to LA Fitness Maps sites, read some of their reviews. It's pretty bad. Anyways, he used many other techniques as well. He used oxytocin connection with my husband. He was like, oh, it'd be cool to see your progress and your husband's progress together at the same time, because my husband had already signed up for the program. And so, you know, you got to let people make their own mistakes. And also sometimes people do genuinely want to pay for a program like that in order to make them consistent, which could work. It's possible. I'm not saying not to do it, but I am saying to know what you're getting. Know what you're getting, and don't trust people who are trying to sell you something to tell you the truth. And this is what made me feel so angry, because body shame abuse is so deeply ingrained into U.S. culture that even if I logically know that someone is trying to sell me something and is using shame as a means to perpetuate it, it still triggered me. It still triggered me. And in the past, I would have been scared to talk about all this. This whole episode, I would have never told you in the past because it was so painful and because I was scared. Because I was scared that I thought that if naming that I had been abused in the past, that I would be abused more, or that it would change things in ways that would harm me. So I suppressed it. I didn't tell anyone about all this. I mean, I told only very trusted people. Like in high school, I had some teachers that I would tell everything to, a couple of teachers, but not many. And you see, when you try to tell someone when you're as a teenager, hey, like, This is what I'm going through. Like, people just think, oh, you're a teenager. You have overblown emotions. They just kind of throw out anything you say if you're between the ages of 14 and 17, because they assume that hormones equals emotional dysregulation and equals overblown communication and equals overly dramatic styles of communication. So in other words, I'm coming from a lifetime of not being heard. Basically, that's what I'm telling you here. And not only a lifetime of not being heard, but a lifetime of being shamed. Things I've been shamed for in my life. Let me just list 10, okay? I can give you 1,000, but I'll list 10. Number one, I've been shamed for not wearing a dress. Number two, I've been shamed for not wearing makeup. Number three, I've been shamed for not shaving my legs. Number four, I've been shamed for not plucking my eyebrows. Number five, I've been shamed for how my stomach looks extensively. Number six, I have been shamed and bullied and emotionally abused based on how I look from men mainly and boys in middle school and high school. And you might say, oh, that was then. Well, here's the thing. It wasn't just then. It was now too. It's now too, because this is ingrained in our culture. This is ingrained in our culture. People, when they see someone that they think is a woman, they're judging you based on how closely to that familiar beauty standard do you conform. That's what they're judging you on. And if you're a man, they're judging you on the same thing, except it just looks different. If you Google right now, Google attractive man or attractive woman, that right there, that's the conformity that they are judging you on constantly. And God forbid if you're neither gender or anywhere in between, anywhere else in this gender identity, anything else. If you're not cis, I feel for you. I don't know how you're surviving this, because people are going to be categorizing you falsely in both directions, and it sucks, and I'm sorry. And it's not fair, and that is why I am building awareness on this to try to change it. I'll give you four more things that I've been shamed on. Don't worry, I didn't lose track of count. So some other things I've been shamed on. I've been shamed for not showing emotion in my face. I remember when I was 3 or 4 years old being absolutely screamed out because I wasn't making eye contact. And in fact, it was the screaming that got me to start making eye contact. And it was the social disapproval and social exclusion that ultimately taught me the 3 seconds on, 2 seconds off eye contact algorithm to make people feel comfortable enough not to abuse you. And like, that's sad. If I need an eye contact algorithm to not be abused, that's really sad. And I think that really speaks for how big this problem is in our society, that people subconsciously are judging everyone they meet constantly on all of these shitty conformity metrics. And conformity is exactly what it is. It's based on conformity of how familiar you feel to them. So there's this thing in autism where people will actually, at first glance, first impression, judge autistic people more harshly than anyone else. And they don't even know why they're doing it. And I can tell you why they're doing it, because I've learned from pain how to do it, quote, right. And I hate saying it like that, because it's not right. It's not right at all that we should have to create a mask or a fake ass persona in order to be accepted as a basic human, in order to be treated with respect in society. It's really sad. And this is what autistic people face on a daily basis. And it's not okay. So I'll tell you, how are you supposed to approach it? You're supposed to have the right signals. You're supposed to mirror back in emotional synchrony what the other person is feeling in order to make them feel comfortable and a part of the in-group. And you're also supposed to basically accommodate them in terms of accommodating their emotional state, in terms of most people who are not autistic externalize their emotional state. They expect the world to manage their emotions. And this is a big part of the problem, which leads me to the other 3 things I've been shamed on. I've been shamed from answering questions. That sounds ridiculous. I'm an engineer. That sounds ridiculous. But I actually have been shamed for asking questions, for asking too many questions. Why? Because people think that if you ask questions that you're challenging them, even if that's not your intention, even if you're passionately curious about knowledge in all its forms, and it just really excites you, even if you're just really passionate about life, people hear you asking questions, and then by default, they'll operate from their own projections that you're a threat, to conformity. Which leads me to the next thing I've been shamed on. I've been shamed for not conforming. My whole life, pretty much. I've been shamed for not looking the way that people expect. I've been shamed for not acting the way that people expect. I've been shamed for not making eye contact. I've been shamed for being myself, in other words. So, as an autistic person, you constantly hear that you're not good enough to be yourself, that being yourself is not okay. And this is, right at its core, what causes the rejection wound. It causes the rejection wound, because if you internalize this, especially if you have no understanding of yourself because you don't know about what autism is, or you don't know about the body shame abuse problem in the US, then you get stuck. You get stuck. You start thinking as a kid. It's child logic. If other people are being mean to me, there must be something wrong with me. If other people aren't treating me kindly, it must be my fault. And that's tragic. That's tragic. Prostitution girl did never, ever, ever deserve a name like that. And I hope that you'll be willing to increase your awareness of body shame abuse. And above all, I hope you'll be able to call it out. You know, like, this is not a secret. This is really not a secret. Go anywhere in the US, especially as a woman. Like, I think that a lot of men don't really fully understand how huge this problem is, or rather they don't see it as a problem because of male privilege. And maybe if that triggers you, if that word triggers you, then maybe try to understand more about what privilege actually means. It doesn't mean you don't ever have struggles or problems. It just means that you aren't going to be judged for these things. You're going to be judged for other things, of course, but you're not going to be, you know, gaslit by an entire U.S. medical system, for example, or maybe you will if you're a very special edge case, which I'm definitely agreeing is in the realm of possibility. But there's a certain level of privilege that men have that women don't. There's a certain level of privilege that autistic people have that autistic people don't. And there's a certain level of privilege that white people have that black people don't. And it sucks. I wish I could change it. But the only way we're going to change it is by admitting it exists. You can't just put your head in the sand and say, unconscious bias isn't real. I had a coworker actually tell me this once. He said, unconscious bias is not real, and that I just have to think happy thoughts and good things will happen to me. Yeah, that really did not help my OCD. Not at all. Especially not the magical thinking aspects. But hiding from our own awareness of our own shadow is never the answer. In fact, the answer is the exact opposite. If you can look at yourself and be like, you know what? Okay, I admit it. I'm a vulnerable person. I am a vulnerable person who has flaws. I'm not perfect. I'm going to stop pretending to be perfect because I'm not perfect. Not perfect at all. I have insecurities. I have things I'd like to change about myself. I have things I'd like to improve on. And above all, I want to take accountability for any possible ways that I've perpetuated pain and abuse and suffering that was unnecessary and unneeded for other people. If you can start admitting, okay, maybe I'm not perfect, maybe I don't have all the answers, that's all we need. It's the awareness of your own problems that frees you from them. I'm going to say this again because that's important. It's your awareness of your own problems that frees you from them. It frees you completely. Because as soon as I started becoming aware of my parents' projections, I started realizing, wait, it was never about me. As a kid, I was never deficient. I was never unacceptable. It was always okay for me to stim. Even if I was punished, it shouldn't have been punished. It was always okay for me to be me. In fact, who else could I be? Who else can you be? You can create a fake mask of suffering, because that's what it is. A fake mask where you throw yourself as far back as possible and don't let anyone ever see it. And you can try to hold that for a really long time. And you know what that leads to? It leads to burnout. It leads to mitochondrial dysfunctions. It leads to inflammatory conditions, autoimmune conditions, a shitload of other health problems, and a long list of issues. What does body shame lead to? What does body shame abuse lead to? It leads to self-hatred. It leads to perpetuating polarity between your internal parts. It leads to false beliefs. People thinking they're not good enough. People thinking that they're lazy. People thinking that love is a conditional thing. But it is not a conditional thing. Love is an unconditional thing. That's what real love means. And if you went through conditional love as a kid, you didn't deserve it. I'm here telling you right now, you didn't deserve it. You deserved a parent who was able to meet your emotional needs, who was able to attune to you, who was able to look at you and say, you're beautiful and you don't need to conform to any standard. Who was able to look at you and say, you don't need to be like me to be worthy. Someone who's able to give you a hug if you need it. And someone who's able to actually understand your emotional needs and your needs in general without judging them. You don't need to tell autistic people to change who they are. You don't need to tell fat people to change who they are. And you don't need to tell skinny people to change who they are. In fact, it's bold of you to think you can change anyone. I'll go outright and say it. People can only change when they want to change. Which is why awareness is what frees you from your problems. The awareness of the issues that are embedded in legacy traumas in your family and in society. Why are women seen as more capable, more worthy, and more sexy if they look a certain way? Why are men seen as more able to provide, more strong, and more worthy based on their strength levels, based on an externalized appearance? And above all, why as a collective are we judging our own self-worth and self-capabilities on other people's approval? Can anyone answer that? Can you tell me why you need other people's approval? Like, I genuinely want to know the answer. Is it an oxytocin boost? Is it serotonin? Is it dopamine? Like, you know, the scientist in me wants answers. Why do you need other people's approval to feel okay with yourself? I'm here to tell you that you don't. You can say, you know what? I'm going to love myself. You know what? I'm going to love myself out of spite. It sounds ridiculous saying that, but it's true. You can love yourself. You don't need anyone else to say that you're good enough. You are already good enough. You're already good enough. Whether you're fat, whether you're skinny, whether you're black, whether you're Asian, whether you're white, it doesn't matter. Like, I mean, it matters in terms of privilege and awareness of that, yes. But that doesn't define your worth as a person. And I don't understand how so many people are completely sold on these lies that love is a conditional thing. Thank you so much for listening.